ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 22। इट इज टाइटल्ड एलिमेंट्स ऑफ मटेरियल क्रिएशन एंड द टेक्स्ट नंबर 4। श्री भगवान उवाच।
श्री भगवान उवाच।
युक्तं च सन्धि सर्वत्र।
युक्तं च सन्धि सर्वत्र।
भाषन्ते ब्राह्मणा यथा।
भाषन्ते ब्राह्मणा यथा।
मायां मदीयामुगृह्य।
मायां मदीयामुगृह्य।
वदतां किं नु दुर्घतम्।
वदतां किं नु दुर्घतम्।
श्री भगवान उवाच।
श्री भगवान उवाच।
द सुप्रीम पर्सनालिटी ऑफ गॉड हैड सेड युक्तम रीजनेबली
च
Even
Santi,
they are present.
Sarvatra,
everywhere.
Bhashante,
they speak. Brahmanaha, Brahmanas.
Yatha,
how?
Mayam,
the mystic energy.
Madiyam,
my.
Udgrihya,
resorting to.
Vadatam,
of those who speak.
Kim,
what?
Nu,
after all.
Durkhatam,
will be impossible. Lord Krishna replied, because all material elements are present everywhere, it is reasonable that different learned brahmanas have analyzed them in different ways. All such philosophers spoke under the shelter of my mystic potency, and thus they could say anything without contradicting the truth. So here is the purport by servants of Srila Prabhupada. The word Santi Sarvatra in this verse indicate that all material elements are found within each other in gross and subtle forms. In this way, there are innumerable ways to categorically describe them. The material world is ultimately illusory, undergoing constant transformation. It may be measured in different ways, just as the mirage of an oasis may be described in different ways. But the Lord's own analysis of 28 elements is perfect and should be accepted. Srila Jiva Goswami states that the word Maya in this verse does not refer to Mahamaya or the potency of ignorance, but to the Lord's inconceivable mystic power, which shelters the learned followers of Vedic knowledge. Each of the philosophers mentioned here reveals a particular aspect of truth, and their theories are not contradictory, since they are simply describing the same phenomenon with different categorical systems. Such philosophical disagreement is endless within the material world. Thus, everyone should unite on the platform of the Lord's own opinion as stated in this verse. Similarly, in Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna requests all conditioned souls to give up their various forms of worship and surrender unto Him in full Krishna consciousness, becoming His devotees. Thus, the whole universe can be united in love of Godhead by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. By the Lord's revealing Himself to a sincere devotee, the controversy of analytic philosophy is ended. ओम ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाशलाखया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकं जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा। So this is actually the second part of the verse 4. So the first three verses Uddhava asked a question to Krishna. So we are actually continuing from there. So the main point of Uddhava's question is different categories are mentioned in analyzing matter. So Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita as well as in Bhagavatam the 28 material elements. At the same time, there are different philosophers who are learned in the Vedic scriptures, not the so-called philosophers of this age, but those who are learned in terms of Vedas, and they have categorized in different ways. So how is it possible to reconcile different classifications? Is it contradicting? How is it? So that is the sort of question that Uddhava is posing. Now, here the Lord himself is speaking, explaining. Yeah, very well. So, here the Lord is answering this question. He is telling, yes, there are different analyses present. So he is not denying the fact. At the same time, it is not actually contradicting the truth. So they are actually seers of the truth, and they are giving different categories of the material elements, looking in different perspective. Now I was thinking, how this matter can be seen from different perspective. So in one sense, even the modern world, the matter is analyzed so vastly, and so much of time is spent on matter. As Srila Prabhupada says, the living entities have two options. Either put faith in matter or put faith in the absolute or God. There is nothing, no choice in between. So, when we talk about material understanding of matter, naturally everyone will go to the basic understanding. If anyone, you know, 5th standard, 6th standard, if we ask, matter means, you know, basic material elements, they classify maybe electron or proton or whatever. They give a wide description of matter. However, this is changing. There are different theories. There are different fundamental elements of matter that is being discovered, apparently. I was looking into a few things. So it was saying, you know, there are different theories. There are quarks are there, leptons are there, neutrinos are there. You know, these are all fundamental elements, and which even we don't know properly. So even in the scientific perspective, the classification of matter goes in different directions. And it is very hard even for us to understand. And interesting enough, the scientists come up with theoretical model which can actually describe matter. So it doesn't mean that the electron is existing. It doesn't mean that quarks are existing. But these are theoretical framework which is hypothesized by scientists to describe matter. So the model in itself is not a reality, but model is just a model to describe matter. In other words, it's a category in itself just to describe the matter. So it doesn't mean the matter is fully described or the matter is fully conceivable by material analysis. In one sense, the matter in itself is inconceivable to the fullest degree without spiritual knowledge. So Srila Prabhupada defines what is real knowledge. If you read Bhagavad Gita purports, you can see the real knowledge is understanding the difference between matter and spirit. And not only that, and understanding who is the controller of both. Then it is real knowledge. Then we are moving towards the right understanding. It's not enough to understand that, okay, we found some fossils, and okay, now we know who are our predecessors, who are our forefathers. We come to that understanding, okay, then we know everything about our matter. No, that's not true. Even recently, I recently received a mail. It is actually it's a scientific community, mail from a scientific community. It is telling, okay, what happened? Okay, there is a missing link in the evolution of the material body. There is no question of evolution of the consciousness, but the whole analysis in the scientific realm is about the evolution of the material body. And the recent mail was telling, okay, they have found some fossil in South Africa in 2008. And last 2 years, they were analyzing the fossils. One of an adult lady and one young boy. So the 2 years of analysis by 60 well-known researchers in the whole world. So the Melbourne Uni was mailing me. So they were telling, okay, there were some Melbourne researchers also involved in the whole analysis. And they have actually found who are our new forefathers. Okay? So we have spent a few million dollars on this research, and finally we have found out who are our forefathers. If you don't know, we will tell you. So I was trying to read the name, and it's a bit difficult. So I wrote the name because it's quite hard. It was something like, I can't pronounce properly, still I'll try. Maybe Mahatma Prabhu can help. It is Australopithecus sediba. So that is the current new forefathers of Homo sapiens. Now previously it was something else. Now it is changed. So they are telling, okay, this is an amazing, amazing work. But how does it affect our life? Of course, a few million dollars have been spent on this purpose. But does it change our life? No. It'll create a new door, new opening for further research. And after some time they'll come, okay, another few millions of dollars, and then come up with another forefather. This is the next set. It is more close to us. As Prabhu has said, you know, this is not our theory. We never say that we are coming from monkeys. No, we cannot say monkeys. It is a bit, you know, it is too unsophisticated term. If you say the forefathers of Homo sapiens is monkeys, that is really unsophisticated statement. So we need to have some, you know, a statement having some weight. So we have this kind of different names and different characteristics. So Prabhu said, we don't say that our forefathers are monkey, but Darwin says that his forefather is a monkey. So this is the modern research. So this is also trying to analyze matter without God and without the real understanding of consciousness. Now, if we actually think, even regarding matter, we cannot really fully understand without spiritual consciousness. So as Mahabharata, there is a statement, Tarka Pradishto. It means, what is the point in arguing about things which are inconceivable? It's a valid point. Okay, people argue for many things, but if something is inconceivable, then why to have a big argument? Why to publish so many papers? Why to discuss? You know, we can't understand. So there has to be some other means. That is the point that Mahabharata, that verse, is a famous verse, that is making. Now, if we move to the Vedic understanding that was given in the previous verse in Bhagavad Gita and other chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam. That is, okay, there are 20, it is a classification of matter into material elements, generally into 28 elements. And in that, it's not just the gross elements, there are subtle elements. There is, you know, the working senses, there are the knowledge acquiring senses, there is the mind, the intelligence, the false ego, the mahatattva. All these are part of the material, the modes of material nature. These are all parts of the material elements. Now, if you try to see these material elements, it is a little different from what we can understand. Mind is a material element. So the mind in itself is categorized as an element, as a subtle material element, which is quite contradictory, quite difficult to understand from a modern scientific perspective. Not only that, the intelligence, that is also a material element. And it is very important. The intelligence is so important for us. And we have to understand what is intelligence. In Srimad Bhagavatam, in the third canto, it gives actually what is intelligence. What are the functions of intelligence? One of the functions of the intelligence, it is, it can actually ascertain objects. When the senses are in touch with the sense objects, it needs the help of intelligence to ascertain, even to identify what is that object. Say for instance, if you see somebody, first the eyes are coming in touch with one person or a bird or whoever, whatever. And it requires support from the intelligence to identify, to recognize. Cognition is one thing. To recognize, we need the support of intelligence. Otherwise, we cannot function. That is one aspect of intelligence. It is the same with all the knowledge acquiring senses. The support of intelligence is a must. If you want to smell something, if you want to identify a particular odor, needs intelligence. It is said, smell is one thing, it's difficult to identify by machine. It's quite hard to get the odor through a mechanical equipment, but we need actually nose. The machine of nose is required along with the consciousness. And I went to the perfume factory long back, and they were actually selling different kinds of perfumes, and they used to have super nose. These people used to call it super nose. they could identify more than 1,000 different kinds of smells in the perfume. You know, there are many varieties of the smells, and they can actually say, okay, this is the smell, this is different, this is the other one. Their specialization is their nose. They can categorically, they can very clearly tell these are the different kinds of perfumes, and they can very, and the new aroma, if they have to produce, they actually take help of that kind of people. They are trained, and that is their job, to smell. Interesting job. So we can say they have that kind of intelligence to support their smell, to support their nose. Same with ears. If somebody is a good musician, what does that mean? He has got good listening power. He can listen properly. And he can, you know, I may, you know, try different tunes. The tune will go in one direction, you know, the beats will go in another direction because the listening is not good. But if he has got good listening power, then he can actually identify what is the sound, what is the beat, what is the tune, all to the perfection of raga, they can go. So this is supported by the intelligence. Not only that, doubts. That is also a function of intelligence. We sit in the class, you know, manage to sit, you know, go through the whole 40 minutes or half an hour or something, in between a few nap and snap, and get up. And some people have a lot of questions. Okay, thoroughly they analyze. So it is one of the functions of intelligence. They can question, they can analyze, and they have some valid doubts. That is a part of the intelligence. And another interesting aspect of intelligence is memory. Memory is one aspect of intelligence. If one is memory is good, sharp memory means it's a sign of intelligence. And sleep is also a function of intelligence, sleep. Because if we want to actually, if intelligence has to function, it requires sleep. Otherwise we become, you know, if we don't have enough sleep, we become zombies, you know, it's like robots. Just the mind can't function, the intelligence can't function. So sleep is an aspect of intelligence. So if we see intelligence, just one material element, a subtle material element, as given in Vedas, we can see so many characteristics as given in Bhagavatam. And these are very valid. And we can, it is from our real experience, we can actually see it is there. And on the other side, when we talk about intelligence, Srila Rupa Goswami, actually he says, okay, there are two different aspects of intelligence. One is to discern, to make right the decision. The power to make right decision, and also good memory. And he uses this term to describe Krishna. So he says, Krishna, he's so intelligent, his memory is so sharp. He was giving the example of when Krishna was studying at Sandipani Muni's Gurukul. So once Sandipani Muni tells something, immediately Krishna understands everything. Actually, Rupa Goswami's father says, he doesn't have to understand anything, he knows everything. But at the same time, when he's acting as Naralila, acting as a human being, when he hears something, immediately he learns. He gets mastery of the whole subject. So he says, okay, this shows he's very intelligent. And further, he gives another example of Krishna's intelligence. He says, he gives the pastime of Kalayavana. Is it Kalayavana and Muchukunda? Have you heard that pastime? It's in that pastime, Muchukunda actually fought for the demigods. Because they wanted a good captain, a good soldier, not a soldier, captain or the senadhipati to fight, the commander-in-chief to fight against the demons. So the most qualified person was Muchukunda. So the demigods took support of Muchukunda. They had the fight, and fight went on for a long time. Anyone knows exactly the time? Anyone remembers? It's a long time. My memory is not that good, so I can't remember how long it was, but it was a long time. So Muchukunda fought so continuously, and at the end, the demigods asked him, what benediction you want for this endeavor, for this sacrifice? Muchukunda said, I just want to sleep. It's very good. I just want, if somebody is too tired, if he say, okay, I'll give you gulab jamun, he will say, no. I'll give you a lot of money. No, I don't want. I just want to sleep because I'm so tired. Same way Muchikunda said, I just want to sleep. Then Muchikunda was a little concerned. Because if I sleep and suddenly if another war broke out, these demigods, they will come back to me and they will wake me up and I had to go again and fight. So he said, okay, this the benediction, I have a condition the side on the side. And the condition is, if somebody wakes me up like this, okay, get up. Then, if I look at them, they will be completely burnt into ashes. So it means nobody can actually disturb Muchikunda. So that was the boon that Muchikunda wanted. And the demigod sanctioned. And he went about, came to the earthly planet. He went into the cave and he started sleeping. It's a long sleep. Very, very long sleep. And this pastime is going on. The sleep of Muchikunda is continuing. And Krishna came to perform his pastimes. And his kingdom was attacked by Kalayavana. And Kalayavana is untouchable. So Rupa Goswami says, Krishna is using his intelligence. He's thinking, Krishna can kill anybody. But Krishna is thinking, I can't kill Kalayavana directly because he is a Malaycha. I don't want to touch him and I don't want to use my weapon. I have nothing to do with him. But I want to kill him because he is my enemy. He is coming to attack. So Krishna, what did Krishna do? Anyone knows? What did Krishna do? What he did? He started running. Isn't that? Krishna is running and Kalayavana is chasing him. And he went inside the cave where Muchikunda is sleeping. He ran inside and Kalayavana came and he actually kicked whom? Muchikunda, thinking it is Krishna. Muchikunda opened his eyes and Kalayavana was burnt into ashes. And at the same time, Muchikunda had a benediction that in that lifetime, he would get an opportunity to see Krishna face to face. So, by the perfect arrangement, Krishna could actually give the audience to Muchikunda also. So this is the perfect arrangement. Rupa Goswami says, this is intelligence. Considering different aspects and making the right judgment at the right time. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, it is actually not possible if we consider the activities of Lord Chaitanya, it's not possible to describe all his activities. What I am describing in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is only a gist. It's only a drop of his activities. Indeed, it is impossible to describe the activities of Lord Chaitanya even for a moment. How can one describe the activities, the whole activities of Krishna or Lord Chaitanya even for a single moment? Incomplete. Because he is inconceivable, all-powerful, Supreme Personality of Godhead, and each of his moments is packed with unlimited activities, unlimited things. So how can one describe even a moment's activities of Lord Chaitanya? This is a question of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. So we can understand what is the real intelligence of the Supreme Lord, the most intelligent person. Now there is very, very important aspect to intelligence, because the intelligence actually helps to keep the faith. The faith is one of the fundamental character of any living entity, but at the same time, where to keep the faith, that is determined by intelligence. Where we have to keep the faith in the matter or in the spirit, or how deep our faith should be, it is a function of the intelligence. Intelligence describes how much faith we need. And if you see faith in itself, Bhagavad Gita says, the faith and knowledge are interdependent. Can we understand this point? The faith and knowledge are interdependent. It's a point, it's a bit difficult to understand. Especially if you analyze in a material sense. Knowledge means, which is a fact, doesn't need any faith. Materially speaking, it's facts, This is black, it's a fact. You don't need any faith. The material element, anything to understand. So all the scientific terms, everything, you don't need any faith, but the knowledge in itself is enough. But Bhagavad Gita says, Shraddhavan labhate jnanam. It's talking about the transcendental knowledge and it's talking about the transcendental faith. But only through faith one can get knowledge. So it means it has direct implication even in the material science, even in the material knowledge. That is only through material faith one can develop material knowledge. in a material sense. Okay, of course, with the spiritual understanding, one can understand the matter. That's different. But faith is a prerequisite to any kind of knowledge. Any kind of knowledge. In this regard, I was hearing a very interesting lecture at one point by Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. He was making the faith, one aspect of faith is, if somebody goes to a big university, when one sees the facilities, big tall buildings, all the different faculties, and the people who are powerful, naturally one develops awe and reverence. He was using the term, this is actually their cathedrals. It is the material cathedrals. Where, if you go to a big temple, one aspect, okay, in the spiritual sense, if we go to an opulent temple, which is very nice, we develop some awe and reverence within. Then it is easy to put faith. So the same principle, if we say, in the material context, in this world, the tall buildings and the nice facilities of a university, it actually helps one to place the faith in that. To place the faith in the process. And without that, one cannot actually go further. So we respect accordingly. If you go to a big university, we have, okay, yeah, the degree is very valid. At the same time, if you go to, you know, low class, maybe a small college, you know, near the Flinders Street, we don't have that much of respect. Same with the student and same with the teacher. Oh, say, oh yeah, the, you know, around the corner, yeah, there is some college, you know. People go there, pay some money, they get some degree. They may teach something or may not teach something. Attendance is not very important. Assignment has to be handed in on time, that's all. You'll get a degree and you may get a PR according to the rules. You know, so the whole thing is there. So it is faith. It helps. And in the Vedic context, we have faith as well. You know, we have different arrangements to show a respectable person. Maybe according to the dress, according to the place, according to the way they are presented. Even in the Vedic context, there is difference. There are the situation, the environment is created to develop faith. Even in the worship, we have so much of arrangements to create faith. It is said, even the ceremony of initiation. In itself, the actual initiation, it is just by word. The Bhagavad initiation is just by word. If we hear from the spiritual master, one develops so much of faith that one is ready to follow lifelong. There is no need of ritualistic ceremony. So what is the real function of the ritualistic ceremony? It actually helps to keep the faith. To make us think that, okay, this is actually serious, and we had to believe and we had to understand and we had to go about in the whole life, that it is a very important ceremony. Our initiation, our diksha. So the whole ceremony is to help us to put full faith in the process. Of course, any yajna has its purificatory element because we are worshipping, we are offering it to Lord Vishnu. So that element is there, of course. But at the same time, it helps to put the faith. In fact, I was reading one of the theories, many theories. You know, the hypothesis has come many years back. Many years back. One quark theory, the theory came in 1964, and some proof came, some explanation came in 98. So far the whole theory was the people were studying, people were distributing books, people were distributing articles, so much of discussion, so much of conferences, so much of money spent on it, just based on the faith. Just based on the faith. I was thinking in the field I was familiar with mostly, in the field of communication. If you see, there are different fields which are involved. On one level, there is a communication theory. And on the other side, the physical network is there. The software aspect is there. Then the actual creation of the substrate and the silicon chip manufacturing is there. And then it actually moves to a completely different field. That is completely solid-state physics and quantum mechanics. The whole paradigm is completely shifted. One side it was communication theory and the other side is completely solid-state physics. And those who are working in one field has no understanding of the other field at all. It's completely the day and night. You know, one who has done PhD in information theory has no clue about what is happening in solid-state physics. But the whole devices are using both the aspects. So how the whole thing function together? It's only on the basis of faith. So faith is a completely inseparable element in the whole world. You know, simple example. If somebody wants to know about anything, say electron or proton or whatever, if a student says, without seeing that, I won't study, his study is finished there. He can go back home. He can go home and do something. If you want to see it or analyze it, he has to first, okay, you do graduation, and after that do post-graduation, maybe become a researcher, and then you can touch the instrument. Touch the instrument, okay? Because the instruments are very expensive. You cannot give to a kid to play with. It costs millions of dollars. So first come to spend at least 15 years or 12 years at least to come to a graduation and a research level, 10, 12 years you spend, and then we will give you the instrument and where you can see, hopefully. So the amount of faith one has to put is enormous. So much of faith one has to have in the modern education system so that one can actually believe that everything is true. And how many years do we want to get some realization in chanting of Hare Krishna Mahamantra? Do we need 12 years? Not many of us are here for 12 years, at least not me. Still we have some faith and still we have some realization. So our process is scientific. Prabhupada says, okay, our process is scientific. Why it is scientific? It is scientific because it is not just knowledge, it's not just beliefs, but it has realization also. That's the reason when we start our process, we have Ato Shraddha. From Shraddha, what is the next? It's a Sadhu Sangha. Then Bhajana Kriya. From Bhajana Kriya to Anartha Nirvritti. Then Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava and Prema. So we are also giving the process in which actually from Shraddha, from a little bit of faith, how our devotion is progressing. So it is scientific because one can actually realize. Prabhupada said, if you want to know how much you have spiritual progress, you don't have to ask 100 people around you. Just look in yourself. If you want to know where we are at, have we got some Shraddha, are we in Sadhu Sangha, are we in Bhajana Kriya, we don't have to do anything. Just look at ourselves. One can say where we are at. And we can also see, you know, what are we lacking. We may need some guidance. We may need the help of Shastra. We may need the help of spiritual master. We need the help of devotees. But at the same time, one can tell where are we at. From a little bit of faith, we start associating with the devotees. That is the next stage. From there, we do the practice of devotion service. Then we can see the heart is getting cleansed. First we see there are a lot of anarthas, unwanted things, and it is getting removed. Year after year one can see, okay, there is some change. So this is realization. One can see that. And from there one can come to the steady stage of devotional service and further. So this is faith. Everyone start with the faith in all the realms of knowledge. But at the same time, in devotional life, with realization, we can understand it is true. So it is said at the ultimate sense, 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita says, Jnana Vijnana Triptatma Kudastha Vijitendriya Yukta Ittichate Yogi Sama Loshtrashma Kanchana. That is, a yogi, one who is actually purified completely, that is, he is completely satisfied by Jnana and Vijnana. Both by the knowledge which is theoretical as well as Vijnana. That is the realized knowledge. So even in the scientific context, the same term is used. Vigyan is used to understand. Vigyan means science. So even a yogi is completely scientific because he has full realization on the absolute. And of course the realization is based on the knowledge and the practice. It is said, Triptatma, he has actually full satisfaction, means he has actually the happiness in devotion service. It's not just theoretical framework, but one has the real happiness in devotion service. So we also develop some happiness in devotion service. It is like we have, you know, if you have seen any rocket launch, have you seen any rocket launch? There is counting down from, you know, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, whatever, and goes to 1, 0. Then suddenly, when it is 0, the rocket is going up and the scientists are actually jumping up. Have you seen that in the TV, you know, the rocket launch of many things? Similarly, we actually count down from 16 actually. When we are chanting, our rocket launch is from 16. Okay, 16, 15, 14, 13, you know, goes down. 3 means we are almost happy. 2, 1, 0 means we are completely elated, complete happiness. So, this is not the actual basis of our happiness. I am not talking about this kind of happiness in devotional service. But when we are chanting, how much heart is felt? How much heart is involved in chanting? Okay, first level, okay, we should hear what we are chanting. And then we had to see how much are we using our heart in chanting. As Prabhupada says, you know, when we chant, we have to chant like a cry out, like a baby means we are actually using our heart in chanting. We are hearing for the holy name, but the heart is involved in hearing the holy name. So the holy name is close to us. If we chant like that, then it is not just the countdown. I also count down, you know, from 16 to 15, like that. But not like that. We had to come to better chanting. Otherwise, there is no comment. Or it's a beginning stage. One has to improve at least. So when we try to go back to the material elements, okay, on one level we saw the material elements are just matter. And it is, you know, the different classification as given by the modern scientists without recognition of God, without acceptance of God. And there is a next level of understanding of matter which has no connection with the absolute. That is actually, okay, in the material level, on the material atheistic level, there is no God, no acceptance of God, and the matter is there that is completely independent from God, and there is no God, so there is no confusion. And on the next level, for the impersonalist Mayavadis, okay, there is God that is impersonal, and the matter is present, but matter doesn't exist. So there is no connection between the material elements and God. What does Shankaracharya say? Shankaracharya says, Shlokarthena vivakshyami yaduktam grantha kodhvi brahma satyam jagan mithya jivo brahmeva na apara. He is saying, okay, whatever is, Vedas have so many verses, thousands and thousands. I will explain everything in half a verse. It's a good statement actually. Shankaracharya says, yeah, I can describe the whole Vedic truth by half the verse. And he says, okay, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. There is the whole Brahman is truth and the Jagan, the material elements are actually denying the material elements. So it means you cannot have a connection between something which is imaginary and something which is real. There cannot be a real connection between something which is imaginary and something which is real. So there is no connection between the material elements of this world and the absolute. So this is complete denial of the material elements. And on the next level, one can understand, okay, there is God and all the material energy and the material elements belongs to God, which is true. And on further level we can understand, okay, the whole material elements belong to God, and not only that, all the material elements are within God and without God. The God is within all the material elements, and at the same time, the material elements are within God. So this is the highest understanding. This is inconceivable. Can anyone understand? If there is difficulty, then it is good. If there is any difficulty in understanding this, it is good. Because it is inconceivable. That the Lord is within the matter and is without. The whole material creation is within Krishna. Krishna has proven that. Yashoda Mai asked, okay, the controversy arises whether Krishna has eaten the dirt or not. So, Krishna said, no, I didn't eat anything. So what did Mother Yashoda said? Okay, you opened the mouth. Balaram said, yes, he has eaten. All the cowherd boys said, yes, you have eaten. Krishna has eaten. Krishna only said, no, they are all lying. So Mother Yashoda said, okay, you opened your mouth. That is the best proof. He opened. What did he see? He saw all the material creation. So even in the mouth of Krishna. So what does that mean? Even the whole material creation is within Krishna. So in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada writes, when he speak about the five fundamental truths in Bhagavad Gita, that is the Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala and Karma, when we speak about all the five aspects, actually everything, the Ishvara, the Absolute, is inclusive of all the five aspects. Everything is within Krishna. The Lord, the Absolute Truth, includes everything. So that is Krishna. And it has an implication on a practical level. That is, when everything is belonging to Krishna, we have to use everything in service of Krishna. So it has a practical implication. And not only that, when we understand everything in connection with Krishna and Krishna's presence, then one has to actually live a life and we have to give this knowledge to everyone. Because otherwise it doesn't make any sense. If you know something and if you don't give to anybody else. In the 7th chapter, Bhagavad Gita, the whole description of the material elements are given, and Krishna says, I am present, I am the substance of everything, I am the life of everything. I am the taste of water, the light of the sun, moon. You know, when the smell of the earth, when Krishna says all these points, Krishna makes the point that the whole substance of all the material elements are done by Krishna. It means one can actually remain about Krishna just through the material elements. So that is the use of material elements. A pure devotee, he sees Krishna everywhere. Meaning, he can see, he is completely reminded of Krishna when he sees Krishna's energy. Everywhere. Yamam pashyati sarvatra, sarvatra mai pashyati. That is, I see, Krishna says, such a devotee, he sees me everywhere. How is it possible? Because even in the material world, how can he see Krishna? Because through his energies, he can directly see Krishna. He is reminded of Krishna. And also, of course, he can see the Shyamsundar form also, simultaneously. Premajana chrida bhakti vilochanena sandasateva hrideshu vilokayanti. So he can see because of the love of Godhead. So the ultimate understanding of material elements is, it is energy of Krishna, and it can be used in service of Krishna, and one can be reminded of Krishna just through his energies. Even though the impersonalists deny the material energy, the energies are denied. The Mayavad means the energies of the Lord are denied. So actually there is a Vedic statement which actually refutes this argument. Parasya Shakti Vividheva Shruyate Swabhavagi Jnana Balakriyacha. So this is a statement from Sveta Svetara Upanishad. It says basically it's wrong, because the absolute has Parasya Shakti Vividheva Shruyate. It has multifarious energies. So we accept the energies of Krishna and we use the energies to serve Krishna as well as to be reminded of Krishna. So that is the use of Krishna's energies. And if one comes to that understanding, then one is a devotee. One is a devotee. And we have to utilize that, this knowledge, in our daily life. Practically speaking, we are always dealing with the material energy. Always. So if you don't utilize, and if you can't see Krishna in the material energies, then it is a difficult position, because then we are in Maya. If we are not reminded of Krishna, then we have to do some work. So that is our process of devotional service. That is seeing Krishna through the material energies and utilizing the material energies in service of Krishna. That is the whole process. So I stop here. See, is there any questions or comments or corrections? Yes, bro.
2 days back, there was one article in Age.
Yeah.
Which said that our creation, the scientific and also literature research showed that the creation is 1.5 billion years more than we thought to be. So they have shown some fossil.
Interesting, because this fossil was, the human fossil was something like 2 million years or something. Yeah.
So this article was some 2-3 days back in our field. They have shown the pictures of the fossil and the research.
Yeah, it's interesting, because in research there is one aspect is the money is involved, the power is involved, you know, the places of corruption. I have spoken to a few people, many people have told, especially in the experimental research aspect, one is, you know, one optical scientist I was speaking to, the another one was in the bio. They were telling, in many of the papers published, there is quite a bit of cheating. The data they have provided, it is quite wrong. Because, you know, they have to get something out, and it depends on their life. They have to, you know, something to eat. So it means, you know, they need some money. So, you know, a bit of adjustment of the data, it is, you know, that is there, that is part of it. He was telling, so we can't believe. He was in the experiments, the optical experiments. He was telling, you know, we can't believe, which is true now. If it is mathematical, at least we can, you know, try to do. But the experiment, we had to redo it. Otherwise, just accept as faith. So he was telling, it's a fact, you know, there can be so much of manipulations of data. A couple of people were telling me, it's a fact, it is there. It's known. But the whole industry is running because of the money is involved.
The senses, mind, intelligence. The soul is higher than these three.
That's right.
These three is performing under the orders of the soul, conditioned soul.
Okay, the conditioned soul is entrapped. So, as is mentioned, it's a conditioned state. It's in the bag of gross and subtle elements. The gross bag we can see, and the subtle elements. The mind is the one covering is the mind. Subtler than the mind, the intelligence is there, and the covering of false ego. The soul is present in that. And the soul has the primary function of to desire. That function is present. Even the conditioned soul can desire. But at the same time, when we have a wrong desire means when we are separated from Krishna or any thoughts or any activities which help one to be away from Krishna, that is actually a polluted desire. So when we have the polluted desire, we have the utilization of the mind, the intelligence, everything to go away from Krishna. So ultimately, the choice of the soul, yes, the choice of the soul is there, that is to desire. To be with Krishna or not to be with Krishna. So even now we have the choice. Whether to think about Krishna, to do activities about Krishna, that is our desire. That desire is coming from? Ultimately, what is the source of the desire? It is the soul. So we have, in that sense, we have the choice. We have the choice. So if we desire to serve Krishna, then we can see the mind, the intelligence can support us. So initially there is difficulty for the unclean mind and intelligence to support that pure desire. So that is the reason we are engaged ourselves in the process of devotional service. So in the process of devotional service, the process in itself, it actually purifies the desire, it purifies the mind, it purifies the intelligence, and it dissolves the false ego. So through that, we can actually perform devotional service and we can actually purify ourselves. And actually the pure desire, the original pure desire of the soul to be the servant of Krishna, that can come to the forefront and that can be the only desire. And even within the material body, once the mind, the intelligence and the senses are spiritualized. Yes, Prabhupada gives the example of being a hot iron. There is no difference between the fire and an iron if it is put in the fire for a long enough time. Both are red in color. Both can function the same way. So even the material elements, the intelligence as we described, the mind, and it can actually become completely pure and it can be used in service of Krishna. So the false ego become true ego. Going away from Krishna to go near Krishna as servant. The whole elements can be purified. Starting from actually the soul, we have to desire. It is in our control because we have to desire the right. Otherwise it cannot function. Yes, Prabhu. Okay. One should first of all, beginning of that is first try to hear. So that is the mantra is coming out and we are hearing. So on one level, that is a beginning because it can be a little mechanical. You know, we are just chanting, hearing, and at the same time there is not much support from the mind. The mind is trying to, mind is going everywhere. This process is going to happen, but we don't have a proper listening because there is no involvement of the mind. But now, when we have to improve our chanting, okay, we have to improve our listening means the mind has to be focused. That part is clear? Because that's the basic thing. And when we actually involve our heart means we chant in a prayerful mood. Because that mood is coming from the heart. It's not really, it's not the function of the intelligence. It's not the function of anything else, but it is from the heart. Means it has the element of love is there. What is from the heart is the element of love is there when we are chanting. When we are calling out for help to somebody who is dear, then there is an element of love. Otherwise, and there is an element of faith. Otherwise, we don't call out for somebody whom we don't trust. So how can we support, how can we develop that? How can we support that? To come to that point or to begin that point for us, we need to actually hear about Krishna. When we hear about Krishna, when we hear his activities, when we hear his qualities, when we hear his pastimes, when we hear how he is dealing with his devotees, when we actually develop some faith, then we see how Krishna is lovingly reciprocating with his devotees. With that actually we develop an element of some element of faith, some element of love. And with that, then we can actually call out. That is the beginning of calling out for Krishna while chanting. So if you don't know anything about the person whose name we are calling out, then it is very difficult. Second is, we hear many times, but we don't actually take it to the heart. Okay, another point. Why we use the term heart so many times? The heart is, why one is, okay, the soul is in the region of the heart, point one, number one. If we say take it to the heart, we say many times, you know, you haven't taken it to the heart. What does that mean? It means you haven't taken it to the real consciousness. You haven't taken it to your consciousness. You haven't actually, you know, it is there, but you haven't taken it to your heart. Means you haven't actually taken it to your consciousness deeply enough. That's the meaning. So when we chant, we use our heart, means we are actually taking it to our real consciousness when we are chanting. And there is a faith and there is love, to varying degree. We may be beginning, but that is there. Otherwise, Prabhupada gives the example, you know, when the chanting, one is calling out just like a child. It means, you know, there is that relationship is, one is actually aware of that relationship and one is conscious of that relationship while chanting. It's not independent of listening. It is part of it. It is there. Yes, Prabhupada.
I've got one comment.
Yeah.
And congratulations for such a nice analysis of the subject. So intricate subject. And what Prabhupada said, Krishna is a real person. And we have to love him. And how we can love, as you said, all the time, the chanting is holy. So the intelligence, faith, and love, they are all interdependent. I'll tell you my story. I was maybe 14 or 15 year old, young boy, and I went to one of the exhibitions in the medical college. And there I saw a lot of dead bodies.
Now we have flapping dead bodies outside.
And in one place, they have shown the whole intestine. And I asked the doctor who was there, as he, so I said, what is all this? So he said, this is the whole, this is more than 100 feet long. The whole intestine, more than 100 feet long. And sometimes more. So I was wondering, what is this? So I thought, all right, I should try to become a doctor.
Oh. Good. Okay, good. Good that you didn't faint.
It's such a small body. More than 100 feet, it just. This must be somebody intelligent person.
Okay. That's good. Usually many people faint after seeing so much of that.
While you were reading the
that's the reason. Actually, that's the reason I didn't go to the medical field at all. I chose only Max because I don't want to see blood. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah.
You can serve
people. Yes, right, yeah. You can preach. You can give Krishna.
Prabhu, there are three levels of chanting.
Yeah, yeah.
Can we know which level we are?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's possible to know. Yeah. Okay. If we have to understand, we have to know what are the three levels of chanting. So, what is the first level of chanting?
Offensive.
Offensive. So, what are the characteristics of offensive chanting?
Inattentive.
Yeah, exactly. This is very difficult. Inattentive chanting means the lips are moving, sound is coming, Maybe, may or may not be correct sound, but sound is coming. Otherwise, the new versions, beta versions, alpha versions, new versions of Mahamantra is coming. That's all right. The sound is coming, and sometimes we are listening, sometimes not. So inattentive chanting. So that is one of the characteristics. And also we can see that from the externals. One is sleeping while chanting. Or some people are waking up while sleeping, chanting. One of the characteristics, some chanting is going on. That is inattentive. I can remember. I was chanting. When I started chanting, I used to come from Mangalore. The first few, at least 1 month at least, I was chanting every day. Sleeping every day while chanting. Sleeping means dead, unaware of anything. That too, not for, like that, but just like that for a long time. So that is complete ignorance, a lot of ignorance is there. So that is inattentive chanting. So that is one level. What's the next level?
Lessening.
Yeah, that is Namabhas. That is a clearing stage. Isn't it? The clearing stage is Namabhas. So in Namabhas, if you have to understand Namabhas, one is actually endeavoring to listen. That is, if the mind is going away, one is actually trying to bring it back. So that can be seen as a clearing stage. That is the beginning of clearing stage. Then, want to add now or after that? And so even in that case, there is some offenses because still there is some inattention. But one is using one consciousness and one is using one's intelligence and the mind to bring the holy name, the mind back to the holy name. So the process of hearing continues. So that is the next level. So we can see. So you can analyze yourself. Where are you trying to bring the mind back? Or it can be a mix of. Sometimes we are trying to bring the mind. Sometimes no. We can see how it is actually working, in which mode we are in our chanting. And the final is offenseless. And also, of course, we have to consider the 10 offenses. This is in terms of inattention and the 10 offenses. Yeah. So in a pure chanting, there are no 10 offenses. So no material desire. No blasphemy of the devotees, understanding the difference between the demigods and Krishna, the whole 10 offenses. That's not present. Because why we focus on attention and inattention? Why? Because that is the basis. The all offenses are actually, the inattention is the doorway to all other offenses. So if we can actually stop this doorway, then we have the hope. That's why we are focusing, even in the analysis, we are focusing on the attention aspect. However, we have to make sure that other offenses are not present, because otherwise that will come back. It will actually produce, in turn, it will produce inattentive chanting. Is that clear? Yes? You have a comment before that?
Yeah, one more comment about that story of Mukunda is very wonderful.
Yeah.
About how Krishna killed that demon. And Devan Swami tells this quite often.
Okay. Hare Krishna.
In chanting, you have said that everything should be focused on the senses. Then, the touch is the senses where, we are touching the beads and we are just rotating this one hand. So this is one sense is working. Other one is that we are chanting that Mahamantra, that is sense of, this is another sense is working. And here is hearing, so this is also working. And mind is also working because we are just remembering the God, Krishna, and these things. Consciousness is also working, so that mind is controlling all these things. But how this false ego can be utilized in making this perfect?
You cannot use the false ego. False ego means identifying oneself with the body, meaning understanding that we are not servant of Krishna, but we can use the true ego. That is, remembering that we are servant of Krishna, we are servant of the holy names. We are serving the holy name by chanting. We are calling for Krishna, so it means we are serving the holy name. So that is a proper consciousness of chanting. Yeah, but we are duplicious, that is, we are calling Krishna. When Krishna comes in the form of holy name, we become inattentive, that is our duplicious nature. You understand? We are calling Krishna, and when Krishna comes, we don't listen, so duplicious. So if we can avoid that, actually that is the use of true ego. We actually serving the holy name.
Eyes should be working every time.
What is that?
Eyes,
Eyes can be in the open stage or closed stage, doesn't matter. If other functions, hearing is proper, then it can be open or closed, doesn't matter. That's not it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. What is that?
What is it mean?
In which context? In the Mayavad context? Okay, I'm not saying it's the right statement, first of all. So when it is said, Brahma Satyam Prabhu says, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya, Mayavadis are saying, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. Brahma Satyam means the absolute, the God is true, the spiritual energy is true, but at the same time, Jagat, the material world, the material energy is false. Prabhu says it's not true. It's not a correct statement. The material energy is real because it is energy of the Lord, but at the same time, even this purport said, okay, it is true, but at the same time, it is transforming. It is changing. It's not permanent in that sense. It's transforming. It's changing. The material, the construction is there. After some time, it's not there. It's transforming all the time. But as energy is existing. Energy is existing. So in that sense, it's real. Because it's Krishna's energy. It has to exist. It is there. But at the same time, it is transforming. So it is real. We don't say it's not existing. It is existing. But incorrect understanding is, it is mithya means it is not existing. So I don't know how it's not existing when it is existing. So we defy that argument. We don't agree with that. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.